It's the John Curley and Sherry Elicker Show. John takes the day off, and Jake Skorheim steps in. So great to have you, Jake. So great to have everybody along. Chris Martin's in for Joe because Joe's not feeling so well, but we've got Andrew and Nate and the whole rest of the gang.
Joe Mama.
Yes, that's right. Joe Mama.
It's at least what he said. He said he wasn't feeling well. There's no way to verify that legally, but he said he wasn't feeling well.
Did you want to take a break and go to his house and check him out?
Back in my day, we showed up to work sick or not. No, just kidding. No, I'm sure he's sick. He doesn't strike me as a dishonest person.
Okay, I want to say something, and I want you to tell me what it means.
Okay.
What is the Environmental Protection Agency rule?
To protect the environment.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
And what did Joe Biden just do to help out with that cause?
I believe he started, I would love to know. What did he do?
Well, what he did was he's requiring automakers to ramp up the sales of EVs.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Because they can slash carbon emissions from gas-powered cars. And apparently our gas-powered cars account for about one-fifth of Americans' contribution to global warming.
And this has to all take place by what? Is it 2030?
Yeah,
they've pushed this back beyond. Originally, it was slated to kick in sometime around like 2027, but they or 26 maybe. But they have now said we're going to push this back and we're going to not make this kick in until 2030. Which I guess there's an alliance of auto manufacturers who are quite happy with this, that this new EV rule is being pushed to 2030 because they want to keep selling vehicles and people don't buy electric vehicles right now in the numbers that they were supposed to, and so they want to still make money, which is great for those companies.
Yes. So John Bozzella, the president and CEO of the Auto Alliance, says moderating the pace of EV adoption in 2027, 2028, 2029, and 2030 was the right call. These adjusted EV targets, still a stretch goal, should give the market and supply chains a chance to catch up. That may very well be true. But will it give a chance for the infrastructure to be in place to support these EVs, which it is not at this point? A lot of people say, well, you know, they'll continue to push hybrids, and that would be a solution.
Even Elon Musk, I heard him give a speech one time, and obviously Tesla is the most, I think I heard, the other day I heard that one of the Tesla models was the best-selling car in the world. It's a very successful electric car, but even Elon Musk says there is nowhere near the infrastructure, the capacity to support all the electric vehicles that people would need if we switched over to just EVs, like anytime soon. And so, you know, that's if Tesla's saying that, that's a big deal.
Yeah, and they've come down in price. They say it's within $5,000 now where you can get a car, you know, an EV that's about the same as a regular car. And I am not interested. I'm not even intrigued by it because I guess because I'm old or because it worries me.
Do you, like, here's a couple of things that, as I was looking into this a little bit, I found this interesting. The market would seem to dictate what people want. And so you have the government on one side, you have Joe Biden on one side saying that we are going to mandate no gas-powered vehicles by a certain year.
Mm-hmm.
If the general public is so in love with these electric vehicles, why aren't they buying them? They're just not buying them. Like, so Ford originally had this really ambitious plan. They have this truck called the Ford Lightning, which is really a cool truck, actually. And when I first saw it, they had this really great ad where it's a house. It's a really futuristic, modern-looking house, and it's in a storm. This is a Ford ad that I saw. The house is having some sort of a storm, and it knocks the electric power out. And so the house is the only house on the block that has this Ford Lightning F-150 parked in the driveway. And what does the F-150 do? Magically, it realizes that power has been cut out to the house, and it starts sending the battery power back from the truck battery into the house. And it can power your house, your full house. It can power, if you have whatever conversion thing you would need, it can power your house for up to 3 days, which is pretty cool. Like, that's a cool add-on because my car right now can't power my house if the power goes out. So I like things like that. But even Ford said, we actually are going to cut back our production on these by a third. We had these projections out. We built a new plant. We're actually going to cut our production back by 30-something percent because nobody's buying these trucks. They're just not buying them as fast. And then Mercedes back, it was like 2 years ago, they said, hey, you know what? We're really ambitious about these electric vehicles. In fact, by 2030, they had picked the year 2032, ironically, by 2030, all Mercedes vehicles that we put out on the road are going to be electric. We will not even offer a gas-powered option. And then earlier this year, Mercedes said, well, we're going to pump the brakes on that. Actually, the markets are now dictating people don't want electric vehicles in the numbers we thought they did, so we're going to keep offering gas-powered vehicles. But then you have the government stepping in and saying everything has to be electric. So something is not lining up.
Well, the reason that the Tesla took off like it did is because it's cool.
It is cool.
It's a different kind of car. It's a different looking kind of car. Now they're sort of ubiquitous because you see them everywhere. But when they first came out, they were like, wow, look at that. So I think that has a lot more to do with it than someone buying into the EV thing. I think that's just, by the way, it happens to be an EV.
So you don't think that they're like specifically, oh, I'm trying to have only electric vehicles. It's for climate. You think it's just that's the popular cool car right now.
Yeah, it's kind of a status symbol. So
big time.
I don't think the EV part. I think they would still have sold as many or more if it was gas powered.
Yeah.
I think that's irrelevant to the car. I mean, there are some people out there that believe fully that it is your responsibility to not have a gas-powered car. But I think most of us, it's going to be a tough transition. And there's just nothing that suggests they can get these EV charging stations up. What are you going to do? Replace the gas stations? Where's the property? I live in a place called Old Town Alexandria, and it's just about 4 miles outside of DC. It's a really pretty little, walking town. There is no land.
You got a lot of EV charging stations in Old Town.
There's no land whatsoever to put an EV station.
Yeah.
So I know you can do it at home and all of that, but look at all the examples that we heard about over the winter.
Yes.
When they couldn't charge their cars, they went out, it takes 30 minutes to charge, and then trying to find a charging place if you're on a cross-country trip, good luck.
Yeah, we do road trips every summer. We tend to try to get it, I love going on road trips. One of my favorite ways to vacation. So, and I have three little kids, so we don't want to get them on a plane. That's a hassle. So we pile them all into the car, and we were thinking this summer, wouldn't it be fun? Because I don't have an electric vehicle. I drive a truck, but I was thinking, wouldn't it be fun? Maybe we should try an electric vehicle because gas is so expensive over the summertime, and it's ramping up again. Gas is really pricey. And so last summer we were like, let's look into getting one of those fun Teslas, and I want to try it just to see what it's like. And won't it be cool to not have to pay for gas? And, that'll offset the cost of renting a car instead of just driving one of our cars. And then I started doing some research into how many places I could actually stop between here and Montana, which was our final destination, which is was in Yellowstone. Between here and Yellowstone, where could I stop to fill this thing up? And I started looking. There are not many options the further inland that you head. I mean, there's a lot of options around Seattle, obviously, but the further into Montana, past Idaho, all those places, you just can't find them. And then if you can find them, what would normally take 5 minutes for me to fill my gas tank and then I'm back on the road and I don't have to sit with my kids in a car just doing nothing, the further you get, if you can find a charging station, you're not guaranteed to get in line right away. Somebody else might be using it. And then you have to sit there for a half hour, which is, that seems totally, totally crazy to me. And so it's just we don't have the infrastructure right now. It's not going to work for a lot of people. And so for them to say, we're going to mandate this, I think this is one of those things that the president might say. Maybe they'll even pass it. But eventually somebody else will be in the office and they'll just like shut it down. And people will just continue having gas-powered vehicles.
You're exactly right. Trump has promised to kill this if he becomes president, which is a big if. But if he does, he's got a lot of rolling back of Biden's policies that he's going to do. And remember, Biden is kind of in the hip pocket of, a lot of the environmentalists and a lot of people that really believe that climate change
is our biggest threat. Yeah.
Exactly. It's our biggest threat to everything. So it's an election year. He's going to do those things. And another thing is student loan forgiveness. Allowed $5.8 billion in student debt to be
Wiped clean.
Was forgiven.
Yeah.
The relief total right now for how many student loans have been forgiven, $143.6 billion.
That's a lot of money. That's a lot of money. Can I ask you a question about this really fast? As soon as you say student loan forgiveness, I instantly kind of go, oh, these kids. Like, I get this instant feeling of, I don't like them. I don't like these kids who want college debt just wiped off. And the reason I have that feeling is because I remember after college, and this is the feeling that a lot of people probably have. It's not an uncommon feeling. You might have the same one. I don't know how you feel about this, but we'll get into it. I had to pay off my student loans after college. Mm-hmm. And it took me about, I'm trying to remember how long it took. I was married. So at least I got married, 2 years after I graduated. I got married 5 years after I graduated college. And then once I was married, probably like 2 or 3 years into my marriage, we finally paid off my student loans. Mm-hmm. So I had student loans for like 8 years that I was paying off. And I eventually paid them off. And that was something that I was super happy that I could do because it was awful to go like, oh, wait a minute, college actually costs money? Yeah. So why do I have to pay them off and this next generation doesn't have to pay them off?
I agree completely. And I can't remember who made the comparison and said, why should a person who gets out of college, takes out a loan to start a business, and yet somebody that went to college as an alternative, they get their debt wiped away, but the person that started a business doesn't?
Great question. Yeah.
Not fair.
Not fair. Mm-mm. And here's another thing about student loan debt. Because everybody says, oh, we've got this major student loan debt. That's the thing that they always say. Like, we have this major student debt problem. And we do, because colleges are really, really expensive. The problem, though, is that it is kind of targeted at a very specific, very small number of people. So the 40% of all student debt comes from graduate students. So people who have pretty good opportunities after they finish college. And so we're talking about people who've been to, like, dental school, medical school, law school. These are high earning jobs. And so you are then saying, all right, we're just going to target these high earners and we're going to give them or forgive $10,000 a pop or whatever the number is at whatever time they're doing it. And you have other people who are going, you know what? Like, I started a mechanic shop and I invested money into hiring other people. I had to buy the lift, which is hydraulic and it's really expensive. I had to get all the city planning stuff that has to go into, you know, putting in a new mechanic shop. Why are you forgiving somebody who is, you know, a doctor? Why are you forgiving their student debt? You're just making their life easier. Why aren't you making my life any easier? Just to your point, like, it feels unfair that they're just targeting one group of people and not the other.
I mean, the student debt in this country, they have 4.3 million student loans. It makes up $1.63 trillion.
That's a lot of money.
And I don't really feel sorry for these people that are saying after the pandemic pause, now they're finding that they are struggling to pay back the loans. They're struggling. I'm sorry, but that's just called budgeting.
Yeah.
If you don't, it's kind of like, oh, if your credit card gives you a month or two off and then you have to pay it again, you're like, I don't have the money now. Too bad.
Do you think also, like, here's the other thing that I think about of this. This is happening right now. The student loan forgiveness might be happening right now, but you just can't. The government cannot just keep forgiving student loans indefinitely. So, like, maybe people benefit right now from student loan repayments or wiping out or whatever they call it. Future generations are not going to get this option because you just can't. Like, the government just doesn't have an endless supply of money. The other thing that people rightly complain about is that student loan forgiveness is a stimulus program. It's just giving money to people. But it's not the same as, like, other stimulus programs where that money directly finds its way into other things. Like, it's not directly finding its way into a restaurant down the street or whatever, which might stimulate the economy. It's just wiping out debt that somebody has. And so it's not working the same way in the economy.
Well, in its defense about, you know, this latest forgiveness, the public service loan forgiveness program started in 2007. And people that entered into jobs in public service, nurses, doctors,
firefighters,
all that stuff, were promised that their loan would be forgiven, and it never happened. Mm. So I do think they're owed that money. If that promise has been broken, they've owed their money. And I believe they still had to qualify for this forgiveness. They had to have paid 10 years of it.
Okay. Was there a threshold number, or is it just anybody in public service? Or, like, I know in previous student loan forgiveness payouts, people had to make less than $125,000 to qualify for some of the repayment programs? Is it just any public service person?
I don't think that there's a cap on that. Yeah. I think it's probably, it's an election year again. And so
that's the other part. Do you feel like this is part of the election process?
Oh, absolutely.
Would this be happening? Would this be a push right now if it wasn't 2024? If this was 2022, would this be happening?
Well, it did start happening back then, but this is something that Joe Biden has promised, and he's trying to get the young vote. And he's saying, you know, look what I did for you. I forgave X amount of dollars and how many people were able to get back on their feet. And then there will be one example of somebody, you know, Casey Jones in Iowa was struggling to pay back her loan. And with the student forgiveness loan, she was able to buy a hair salon.
She bought a new car.
Right. Yeah. I mean, we can write the script.
Last question. I know we got to get to a break here, but last question. If Trump was in the White House and he was still president and he did this, wouldn't people be totally legitimate in saying that this seems like an election? It's not election interference, but wouldn't they have right to criticize him for trying to pay off student loans? I think people are totally fair to be criticizing Biden for doing it right now.
Yeah. I mean, back, I guess, in 2020, they said if Trump cured cancer, people would be like, oh, great. Now he's cured cancer. They'd find a way to vilify him no matter what he did, whether it's an election year or not. It's the John Curley and Sherry Elicker show with Jake Skorheim today. We'd love to have you come along for the ride. Why don't you send us a text? You can go to the Muckleshoot Resort text line. That's 1-888-973-5476. Or if you want to check out our Instagram page, it's John and Sherry Show. Sherry is spelled S-H-A-R-I. And you can check out some of the stuff that we've got there.
Oh, Oprah Winfrey.
I forgot what lowbrow humor you guys had on the show.
Really? You should listen every day. You'll get a lot of it. Oprah's back in the news, as she often is when she wants to endorse something. Remember, back in 1988, Oprah came out and had a wagon full of animal fat. And
I'll never forget it.
Yeah, 67 pounds. And she was promoting something called Optifast. And Optifast was a liquid diet that was used to, I guess, help you fast and do all of that.
Was it like Slim Fast? Do you remember Slim Fast?
Oh, yeah, I do.
My mom used to love Slim Fast, and I thought it tasted pretty good.
Yeah, it's pretty good. It was like a smoothie almost.
Yeah, like kind of a malty chocolate thing. Was it similar to that? Maybe. I don't know. Could have been.
I'm not sure, but she certainly moved on.
Yeah.
And she joined Weight Watchers on the board, bought 10% of the company, made $71 million in one day.
Wow.
On that, because the stock plummeted. Stock went up.
Plummeted, yeah.
That's not how stocks work. It's now plummeted because she's off the board, sold her shares, and she's made $221 million on this.
Wow.
So moving on to her latest weight loss. I guess.
Journey. It's her journey, Sarah.
It's her journey. It's always
Sherry,
a journey.
It's about her journey.
She is now all Ozempic all the time.
And if anybody doesn't know what Ozempic is, it is just a. Can you explain this? It's like this is one of many drugs that do. It's like Wegovy is another one. Mm-hmm. I don't know what the other ones are, but it's just a weight loss drug. People just take a. Is it a pill?
It's a diabetes drug, and they found.
Oh, it's a diabetes drug. That's right. That's right. But so people use it for weight loss too.
They use it for weight loss, and the promise of these drugs is that at some point they might be used for addiction because, eating can be an addiction. Mm-hmm. And they find that the cravings for food, alcohol, all of those things are reduced with Ozempic. They didn't know this was going to be a side effect of what it was when they developed the drug, but now that they found all these positive things. And Oprah just had a TV special, or is having one, about this.
Yeah, now, so she's got this new thing. It's an ABC special. You can watch it on Hulu if you subscribe to the Disney bundle. It's called An Oprah Special, Shame, Blame, and the Weight Loss Revolution. Can I play you a quick clip from that?
This
is the teaser here for anybody who's interested.
Obesity is a complex disease.
They are the new drugs sparking the weight loss revolution.
All of a sudden, I felt like I was freed.
But there's confusion and controversy. Are the medications safe? Should children take them?
She would be 500 pounds at 16.
So I'm having a conversation with lead experts to answer our questions.
These medications are really a game changer.
Let's stop the shaming and blaming. An Oprah special. Shame, blame, and the weight loss revolution. Monday on ABC and stream on Hulu.
Can I point something out here that it is a little concerning to me? And you know, I'm not a person who has struggled with you know, weight loss or I don't have a weight loss journey that I can share with you. It's a, you know, I don't go up and down. And this has been a large part of her career, has been talking about her weight loss journey. And she said this recently. She says, all these years, I thought all of the people who never had to diet were just using their willpower and that they were for some reason stronger than me. And she went on to say, but now I realize that they weren't even thinking about food. It's not that you had the willpower. You weren't even thinking about it. You weren't obsessing about it. And I guess she has just completely changed her mind about what weight loss is and her ability to lose weight. It sounds to me, I don't know this to be true, but it sounds to me like she is saying, it's almost impossible for her to lose weight just by deciding that she's going to eat less calories or work out more or just the traditional ways we think about weight, about losing weight. She was on Weight Watchers. Like you mentioned, she owned 10% of Weight Watchers. In fact, she did a bunch of ads for Weight Watchers. She was the face of their brand. And this ad popped up. I actually found this Weight Watchers ad. And it's kind of interesting now that she's doing this, all this Ozempic stuff. But she was really excited about Weight Watchers. She thought it worked great at the time.
I love bread. I love bread. I now just manage it. So I don't deny myself bread. I have bread every day. I have bread every day. That's the genius of this program. I lost 26 pounds and I have eaten bread every single day.
I would recommend giving up the bread if you're having a weight loss issue.
I know. I don't know that that's going to pull me into it. I love bread. Really? If you'd done chocolate cake or, you know, a big hot fudge sundae, maybe I'd think about it.
So here's my question for you, Sherry. Oprah clearly is on board with this stuff. She has now, you know, she looks pretty good. She's lost a bunch of weight. And now she's doing these specials and she's talking about it and everybody's getting very excited about Ozempic. But there are a lot of downsides to it as well. Because again, it's not FDA approved for weight loss. It is approved for treating diabetes. This is, the weight loss is just like kind of a fun extra that they discovered along the way. Do you think it's safe for people to be using this? I mean, I know you're not a doctor, but as a doctor, let me ask you this. Mm-hmm. Do you think it's safe for people to use this? You heard Oprah mention there, is it safe for kids? Like, when I hear those things, I think to myself, no, clearly it's not safe. People shouldn't be giving this to kids. And they should probably be thinking pretty carefully about whether or not they're going to use it for themselves until at least it gets approval from the FDA that it's okay for weight loss. And then how long can you stay on it? Like, can you stay on for just a short term and you get down to a manageable weight and then you just, like, start living your life again? Or is this something you have to take forever?
I think it's something that you have to take regularly, but Sharon Osbourne was on it and she got down to 97 pounds. And I don't think she's a particularly short woman and she had to get off of it just to gain weight.
Oh, she was losing too much weight.
Way too much weight.
Wow.
Yeah. So I think it can work both ways. I would not like to take a drug every day for the rest of my life and have that hanging over my head that the minute that I stop, I'm going to gain the weight back and more. And that's what they're looking at. I think if I were somebody that had an overweight child, I would definitely not do it.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Even though
it's a cruel world and overweight kids are often the victim of things and it's just horrible. But I don't know that, I think the jury's still out on some of this.
The other thing about it too is, you know, you were mentioning some of the side effects. Some of the side effects of this are potential risk of thyroid tumors, cancer associated with Ozempic. Studies have said they found these in rodents when they were testing these on the rodents. Other side effects include nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, stomach pain, constipation, all these things. But people do end up looking like quite a lot thinner and maybe like closer to what they would have an ideal body image. Do you know who the comedian Stephen Fry is?
Mm-mm.
So Stephen Fry is a funny guy. He I'm probably, if you don't know who he is, I can't give you an example, but he's a comedian and he used to be a much larger comedian, but he started to take one of these weight loss drugs. I think it was Ozempic and he lost a bunch of weight. And he said it was really, really great for the first couple of weeks because it completely stopped his desire to be eating food because he had this like, you know, he really loved to eat food. And he didn't have to worry about the willpower. It also curbed his appetite for alcohol. And the first few weeks in, he was like, this is amazing. I'm going to lose so much weight. And he did. But the thing that he then also discovered was the things that accompany this with the lack of, you know, drinking alcohol and the decreased desire to eat all the foods that he was originally eating. He also started having like vomiting fits where he would vomit five times a day, which probably contributes to, you know, some of the weight loss.
Yeah.
There's also like a bunch of diarrhea stuff. And it's like, there's all this other stuff.
You hate the diarrhea stuff?
Yeah, the diarrhea stuff makes it tough. But are you willing to, it's like, you know, it's this double-edged sword. Are you willing to trade some of the uncomfortable side effects for looking great? And if people are willing to do that, then I guess that's their choice. But is it safe in the long run? We just don't know.
I don't know. And I also think the thing with Oprah is that, you know, this weight loss stuff has been her stock and trade for a long time. And I just think haven't we heard this before, Oprah? How many times are we going to hear that you've found the answer? You found the answer with OptiFast. You found the answer with Weight Watchers. Now you found the answer with Ozempic. At what point does it really stick?
I mean, it doesn't sound like it ever sticks.
Yeah.
It's just going to be the new thing in the next couple of years, and then that's what... I just feel it's marketing. It feels like a marketing campaign to me, which makes me uncomfortable with it.
And you know, when she joined Weight Watchers, the everybody got on board because Oprah is incredibly powerful. So she's, I mean, with women, I mean, she has been for a very long time.
I bought stock when she got into it, actually.
Did you really?
Yeah, my wife, she sent me a text. She goes, did you hear what Oprah just did? She just like signed up to be the new face of Weight Watchers. We should buy stock. And we did. And it worked out great. So thank you, Oprah.
Well, you know,
fitness guru, what's her name? Jillian Michaels.
Jillian Michaels.
Yeah. Well, she had stepped in all of this and said, this is very short-lived, this way to lose weight.
Yeah.
After about a year and a half, 18 months, I said, is what she said. After 18,
there's a plateau.
Yeah, plateau and it won't do anything more for you.
Yeah.
And you're just going to keep wasting all dumping all this money into it. But at the same time, it takes away your muscle mass.
Oh, that's true.
And makes you, weakens your immune system. So you're going to have to fight to get all that back. You're going to gain the weight back. So this is very short-lived.
And it's expensive.
Yes.
It's really expensive.
People like Oprah can afford it, but most insurance policies won't cover it because you don't have diabetes. Anything. You're using it for unintended purposes. So, yeah, who knows?
I guess.
Why is that there?
That is Nate. Thanks so much for joining us on the John Curley and Sherry Ellicker show. We would love to hear from you. Why don't you go to the Muckleshoot Casino and Resort text line, 1-888-973-5476. Or you can check out our Instagram page, which is John and Sherry Show. Sherry spelled S-H-A-R-I. I think that I'm not trying to brag here, but I do think that the East Coast is worse for allergies than the West Coast.
Oh, man. That's quite a brag. That is quite a brag.
Today, I had a voiceover job, and I had to clear my throat like 40 times. And that is it's so bad.
Yeah.
And I couldn't, you know, and then you're reading something, and then you get kind of crackly, and then they were like... Yeah, Sherry, your voice cracked on that last one. Could you do it again? And then you're trying to move away from the mic.
You're like muting your mic. Like,
There's no mute. And so,
yeah.
And it's allergies. It's really bad. The pollen here is really bad. And I think you're experiencing it in Washington as well.
Yeah, we're getting a ton of it. I didn't even realize how bad it was until somebody reminded me that I was also doing the same thing. They were like, you're coughing all the time. I'm like, huh? And we're getting a ton of pollen. I thought it was too early to get all this pollen, but apparently we are. I disagree with this. I don't know how they're making this assessment. But if you want to read about pollen, which most people do in their spare time, you can head on over to mynorthwest.com, read all about pollen. There's an article, though, and they talk about, I guess they spoke with the Washington State Department of Health, and they say scientists, this is a quote from them, not me, scientists have found that allergy seasons are getting longer and more severe because of... human-caused climate change is the dominant driver of these longer pollen seasons. And it's now a major reason for increasing concentrations of pollen. I don't know how they're making that assessment, that it's human-caused climate change or whatever, but it is longer. It seems like we're getting pollen in the air for a lot longer. I suffer from it. Are allergies, just in general, are allergies something that you have suffered from for a long time? I say suffer. I don't know if you feel like you're suffering, but...
I just wonder when we're going to get to the point where we don't blame climate change or Trump for everything.
Or the pandemic.
Or the pandemic. Exactly.
I think this pollen is a result of the pandemic. That's what I think.
Of course it is.
Yeah, for sure.
I do suffer from allergies. When my sister was little, she had tons of allergies and had to get the allergy shot every week.
Oh, funny. I mean, it's not funny, but interesting.
I thought it was funny because she got it and I didn't. But it was really bad when we were growing up. I guess they don't do that anymore. Do your kids have allergies or you have allergies?
My kids don't have allergies. I didn't know I had allergies until just recently. My family didn't believe in allergies when we were a kid, so I didn't have them. But I'm allergic to literally everything. And I'm not joking when I say that. I'm not being sarcastic or anything. I am allergic to everything. I went to the doctor. I did the test where they have you done that test where they stick your back full of needles?
When I was a kid, we did it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And then they look at your back and they go okay, well, you are allergic to birch trees or something. And the way they tell that is if your skin starts to puff up, almost like you've gotten a bee sting, then they can tell. And so they looked at my back, and I think there was 49 different things they were testing for. And they're like, oh, it looks like you're actually allergic to every single thing on this thing.
I'm surprised your back didn't blow up.
No, it did. And I was like, this is really uncomfortable. And they're like, it shouldn't be that bad. And it was. And it was horrible. And I'm allergic to, I knew I was allergic to shellfish for a long time. So I've had that allergy. I'm allergic to milk. I'm allergic to all types of pollen. I'm allergic to almost every tree you might come across. I'm allergic to grass. So I just, I'm like the boy in the bubble that walks around. And that's how I live my life. That's how I have to live my life.
I guess we can't invite you over because we'll have milk and shellfish.
Not for me.
And also lay out in the grass and eat it.
Yeah. I will never know the joy of laying out in the grass and eating a lobster, just like people do.
And a big glass of milk.
And washing it down.